You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Murder. Ba-ba-da-ba. Welcome to Death Do Us Part podcast, hosted by my wife, Jamie.
Hello.
And myself, Mark. What up, y'all?
Hey.
Hey, peeps.
This is not a Patreon, right?
It is not a Patreon. It is a regular episode for our peeps. Everyone, my butt surgery went well.
Oh, my God. Nobody cares about your butt.
I know, but I'm just... The surgery went so well, I felt like I needed to share it.
I will say it again. Nobody cares about your butt.
It is draining a little bit.
Nobody really fucking cares about that. At all, even a little bit.
But I cannot say enough good things about Rush University in Chicago. They were absolutely great. The whole team was great. The anesthesiologist, they had the head anesthesiologist come down to talk to me because of my history and
everything. That might be the first time you've said that word correctly, by the way.
Yeah, I know, right? But he actually came down when I had a talk with the regular one because they were going to put me fully under. And then they realized that I was trached before.
I knew they were not going to.
Yeah.
That's why I was not concerned. I knew they were going to end up doing the spinal as soon as the anesthesiologist walked in. Because Rush is a teaching hospital.
Yeah.
So you were going to get a resident.
Yeah.
And the resident was going to be like, fuck yeah.
It wasn't a resident.
But I'm saying that's what I figured. You would get a resident who then would realize you had a trach and go, oh, and call somebody bigger down. And
it was the head.
That's what happened.
The head honcho.
They put you to sleepy and then did the spinal, which is what I figured they were going to do.
Yeah, they gave me propofol, which...
Propofol.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which put me under a little bit, but they gave me a spinal, which didn't hurt like you would think it did because they did it 6 times because they kept hitting my spine.
But did they knock you out first? Did they give you the propofol first?
No.
Oh, fuck you. I would have been like, can I have that first?
No, it didn't hurt though, but it hurt the next 2 to 3 days after.
Yeah.
Oh my God, did it hurt.
Spinals are like, I mean, I've had 2, you know, because of the kids. Usually you're going to be sore the next day, obviously, because they're poking literally in your motherfucking spine.
Yeah.
That's painful.
Yeah.
Usually the only issue is if you get a little bit of like spinal fluid leakage,
but
you get a massive headache. So, you know, and the only way really to fix that, they put a patch on it, which is really just a fucking Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And tell you to lay flat for 2 days.
No, they didn't do any of that, but they realized once I was trached, they're like, we don't have time to examine your throat.
So we don't know
what type of tube to put down you.
On top of the fact, I mean, you would notice this. I don't know if anybody else would. When you were trached, you had no neck.
Your trach
scar is actually down and to the left about 3 inches from where your actual trach was.
That's funny that you said that because the first anesthesiologist, when she looked at it, she's like, why is it down so far?
Why did they trach your collarbone?
She's like, this is down far. Yeah. I was like, because I'm down 70 pounds from when I was.
Right.
She's like, oh.
So yeah, okay. The time you went in, when you went in for that, you were 320 something like that, and you literally had no neck. So where you were trached obviously was the correct spot to trach you then, and even then when they trached you, you were down 20 something pounds because you had already been out for 3 weeks,
right?
So But now the tray, it's like, I mean, it's a solid 2 inches down and probably it's 2 inches to the left. It's essentially your collarbone.
It is. So it's on my chest.
Yeah. So I'm sure when you said you were trached and they looked at your throat and didn't see a trach scar, they were like, this guy's full of shit. And then you pull your shirt down and you're like,
she's like, why is it down so far? She's like, this, I've never seen this. Yeah. I was like, because I'm down 70 pounds. Yeah,
like you literally had no motherfucking neck.
Yeah, that. I know. So, I was a big dude.
Yeah.
I was a really big dude. I still think it's
funny. Like, one of your guys came in who was kind of your boss at the time. He left a picture.
Yeah.
On the counter. And then one of the nurses came, oh my God, he's so swollen. Oh my God, that's not him.
I know.
She was like,
that's a totally different person.
And I'm like, I get it. They all look the fucking same, but no. Right. It's just like Coleman and your mom.
Oh, I know.
Oh my God.
I know.
I love him, but your mom, everybody. Mary, just because they're black doesn't mean they're Coleman. Right. Okay. Fucking everybody.
Oh, finally, my God.
I'm telling you, finally the guys were just like, hey.
Yeah, right.
What's up?
Right. Like,
whatever. There's no explaining that shit.
No, you can't. You can't. Mm-mm. But anyways, what an awesome hospital. They did a great job, and they were, the coolest thing though, is because I wasn't totally under, they asked me what music I would like to listen to. So they all blasted Metallica in the operating room.
I
love that.
I asked the last time I had surgery, because you know, they take everything before you leave the room. And I was like, can I just wear my glasses there? And they're like, why? And I was like, I want to see it. And the one guy was like, you've had like 19 surgeries. And I was like, uh-huh. And you fucks always take my glasses.
Yeah.
I've never seen the inside of an operating room except when I was doing my clinicals, you know, for medic school. I'm like, can I please just wear my glasses? Please.
Yeah.
And they had the music playing already, so.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, my God.
So we were all rocking out to Metallica.
I was at the hospital yesterday and trying to transfer, like give a patient to triage.
Yeah.
And this woman came up behind me and I literally thought it was your sister.
Oh, really?
I turned around and I was like, hey, kid. Oh, you're hi. And she just looked at me and I was like, I'm sorry, you could be my sister-in-law's fucking doppelganger. And she's like, oh my God. And then she talked like her and I was like, fuck, maybe you are.
Oh, really?
She just wanted to know. She's like, they dropped my dad off. She's like, but do I like have to check him in? I'm like, who dropped him off? She's like, Orland Park. And I was like, I hope not. I'm like, they're supposed to. Right. So when I was checking my guy in, I was like, hey, did Orland Park check in a guy? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. So, but yeah, she could have been Kimmy's fucking doppelganger.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was weird. Like the same like bang poof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird.
Really?
Yes. Very weird.
Oh, because that's not like familiar.
No, because it's not, but yeah. Oh, and my partner, I won't say her name out loud because I didn't ask her yet. But so she has two kids. She has two older sons. And obviously I have two kids. She talks to her kids all the time at work. I talk to my kids all the time at work. We got separated for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then when we finally got back together, I was like,
yeah, I know. I gotta tell you something.
And
that.
She's like, what? I was like, I miss your kids. And she's like, I miss your kids. And she's like, my kids miss you. And I was like, my kids miss you. So she told one of her sons that I have a podcast.
Yeah.
So he looked it up and he called her back and he's like, Mom, like, this is like a thing. And she's like, I know it's a thing. Like, she's been doing it for a while. And he's like, no, like, she's like a big fucking deal in the podcast world. And she told me that and I was like, oh my God. And she's like, didn't you already know that? And I was like, kind of, but it's still really fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's still really weird. Still
crazy. Yeah.
But he, like, he said he Googled me and then Googled us and he told her, like, they're a super big fucking deal.
No kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's like, cool.
I was cheesing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be cheesing it too.
This poor fucking girl. I mean, she grew up in, like, Minnesota, kind of grew up, but she's
Minnesota.
She's been in Arizona for how long?
Yeah.
So we get a call at 6:30 this morning for the full arrest. The bay door goes up and I'm like, motherfucker, it's like a nor'easter outside. And I was
it was bad today.
And at 6:30 in the morning, do you know how many plows are out? Oh, none.
None.
Not a single one.
Yeah,
and
it was bad.
We were the backup ambulance, which means we weren't super close. We were the second closest. If we're Yeah.
It was, so dude, then, this Chicago weather is for the fucking birds.
So we ended up, like, I was like, do you want me to drive our ambulance to Silver? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we went to leave. I was like, do you want me to drive back? And she's like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I was like, okay. I was like, take your time. And she's like, I'm just going to drive a little slow. I'm like, dude, I drive like Grandma fucking Moses in the snow. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, who cares? But as long as you make it,
and I will tell you, counts. Like, we tend to, so we have to take the expressway to Silver.
Yeah.
Obviously. A lot of the times we'll shut it down.
On the expressway, really?
Because people, like, you know, people panic on the street and they stop right in front of
you. Oh, God, well, yeah.
And we don't stop on a dime.
Right.
So please don't slam on your brakes in front of us, because I will plow into you, especially if it's snowy. But for some reason on the expressway, people panic.
Yeah.
When they see the lights or they hear the sirens, they panic. He's all over my foot too.
Yeah.
They panic harder than the normal road. So a lot of times we'll just shut it down, because our ambulances can only go so fast before they top out, you know?
Yeah.
But like, so there was two of us this morning. We had to shut down because people were, they were freaking the fuck out when they saw lights, and then they saw two lights.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Everybody forgot how to think.
Oh my God. So people suck.
Let me, it's just a PSA. Let me just give you a PSA. If you see one vehicle with lights on and sirens, always assume there is a second one behind it.
Yeah.
There may not be. Always assume that there is.
That's a good PSA.
If you see a fire truck, there is always,
an ambulance going to be a second
vehicle behind it. It's either going to be an ambulance, or it's going to be a battalion chief, or it's going to be a truck. If you see a fire truck, engine squad, whatever, there is going to be a second vehicle behind it. Ambulances. Always assume there is somebody behind us. Nine times out of ten, there's a cop behind us.
Right.
But when there's one, there's two.
Yeah.
Always assume that. And people don't assume that. They'll see the one, like they'll see the truck go and then pull out right the fuck in front of us. Like,
oh my God.
They don't even, or if like we're in front of the truck and the truck's behind us, they literally like, they see us and they get tunnel vision on us.
Yeah.
And then just pull right the fuck out in front of our truck.
Dude, people suck.
Ambulances don't stop on a dime. Have you ever seen a tower ladder try and stop on a fucking dime?
Oh,
tower ladders
God.
Don't stop.
They slide.
I mean, the guys basically like put their feet out like fucking Flintstone feet to try and get the shit stop. But like, if there's one, there is two.
Yeah.
Always assume that.
It's a good PSA.
And if you see an ambulance and there's a cop behind us and his lights are on, we're probably in a bigger hurry than you assume. Right. Get out of our way. There's a reason there's a cop behind us.
Yeah.
And in Tinley, there's always a cop with us.
Yeah.
And behind us.
Oh, that's crazy. Oh, yeah.
It's the one guy's like, so I'm going to ride with you guys. And I was like, what? He's like,
holy shit.
He's like, well, they're cuffed. And I was like, uh-huh. And I pointed to my key. He's like, you have a handcuff key? And I was like, you come with us? I was like,
this is crazy.
This is insane. And he's like,
I've never heard that before.
He's like, and the other one's going to follow us. I'm like, what?
Dude, I've never heard that before.
If they're in custody, we have an officer in the ambulance with us.
That's insane.
When we have
like
fucky calls, like they go froggy,
they'll
ask, do you want us to come with? And we're like, no, we're fine. And they're like, cool, we're gonna follow you anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. We had one chick, the guy's like, do you want us to go with? And Laura and I are like, I just said her name. Oh well, I'll tell her. I said, no, we're fine. It's not a big deal. So I jokingly said to the cop, I said, if you see me pull over and jump out, I'm like, just follow fucking suit. And he's like,
yeah.
All right. I get maybe 2 miles from the hospital. I'm turning a corner. I look in my rearview mirror and I hear her and I'm like, nope. I fly to the side of the road and jump out, and the cop jumps out and he's like, I thought you were fucking kidding. I was like, why would I kid you? So then the town that we're in, three more squads pull up.
Really?
I was like, I don't know what's happening.
This is insane.
I don't know what's happening here.
Oh my God.
But I'm teaching them about Curlex.
Yeah.
Because we had cuffs, and that did not suffice. And I was like, hey, guys, watch this. Yeah, fixed it.
Yeah.
But then the three squads from that town followed us.
That's insane. I was like, what the fuck? We would never do that.
No! No.
For even a combative
no.
patient,
you guys are like,
we would
cool.
see you later.
We will follow you to fucking Halsted.
That,
have a good one.
That was it.
Which
we would
knew
go
it.
To Halsted Street and see you guys later.
This is why everybody got tied down with Curlex and we all had handcuff keys.
If anything happened, call the town that you're in.
Most of us had a set of handcuffs and we all had handcuff keys for that reason. You guys just didn't have the staffing to do it.
No, we didn't.
The other thing that...
We had three, four officers in a fucking shit town.
The other thing that boggles my fucking mind. Are you ready for this?
What?
We'll go on 96 calls.
Yeah. And 1096 is a mental subject.
The cops are like, do you need us to petition them?
What?
I'm like...
We never did.
The first time one of the cops said that to me, I was like... Oh my God, what? And he's
like, dude.
He's like, we didn't hear it. He's like, so and so heard it. He's like, we can third party petition. I was like,
Oh my God. If I worked in this town, I would not know what the fuck to do.
I'm telling you, this is why my first day there,
so used to the ghetto.
Yep. They're like, you can't swear, you can't do this. And I was like, I'm going to get fucking fired on day two.
Oh my God.
But the first time a cop was like, do you want us to petition him? I was like, what?
Yes.
What? And he looked at me and he's like, Do you need me to? I was like, you know how to do that?
Right.
And he's like, where did you come from? And I was like, Oz, I don't know. Like, not here.
The fucking ghetto.
It's like the one guy.
Where that shit doesn't happen.
I was like, dude, how much cocaine is like $50? And he's like, I don't fucking know. I work in Tinley Park. I was like, dude, I'm from Dalton. I know crack rocks.
Right.
I said, cocaine is designer.
Right.
It's fancy. I don't know what that means. So yeah, when he's like, yeah, we'll petition him. I'm like, I don't even know how to answer that. Like,
right.
I don't know how to answer that. I was like,
oh my God.
I don't think I need you to. I said, I'm pretty sure like what he said was enough. And he's like, that's all right. We'll come with you anyways. And I was like, where the fuck am I?
That's insane, dude.
Yeah.
That is so fucking insane.
Yes.
Wow.
We went on another call, and this is the other. You see, we had a couple that were, you guys were very helpful.
Yeah, we were.
To a point.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. You guys were very helpful. Some towns were very helpful. Some were not. We had a patient last night. The cop was standing behind me. I was like, well, give me the bag. Like, you've been carrying it all day. And everything was icy. Everything was a pain in the ass yesterday. It's cold as shit. And literally every call that we went on, all like 17 fucking calls, were legit medical calls. Like, legit, they needed to call an ambulance and probably needed to call an ambulance 12 hours prior to actually calling. Like, they were sick.
Yeah.
So I was like, just give it to me. I'll carry it. You've been carrying it all day. And the cop was like, do you want me to carry it? And I was like, yeah.
Right?
I handed it to him and he was like, all right, I'll get the door. But, thanks. Okay. I was like, do you deliver coffee too? Can we get coffee?
Crazy.
Yeah. Not all of them are like that.
Yeah, right.
But there are a few that are stellar. There.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Good deal, man. Yeah. What a different world.
It's such a different... We have walk-ins. Did I tell you about my walk-in?
No.
It was like 2 a.m. and the doorbell rang and I'm like, should I wake someone up to like answer the door?
Hello?
With me? I'm like, the tower had been out all fucking day. They had just gone back to bed.
Yeah.
My partner was asleep. I was up. Shocking.
Yeah. Right.
I'm in fucking sweatpants and Crocs, like chilling at the picnic table.
Right.
And then I'm like, should I wake somebody up to like answer the door? And then I'm like, nah, fuck it. It's Tinley Park.
Right.
This guy's having legit chest pain. Wow. I get him in. I sit him down. I go wake up my partner. I'm like, we had a walk-in. And he's like, okay. I get the guy in the back of the ambulance. We don't even have the bay doors open yet. I get the guy in the back of the ambulance. He's like, can I call my wife? And I said, you just said you left your house. He's like, yeah, but I didn't want to wake her up. Okay.
Wow.
I'll give another PSA in a minute. I started the IV, gave the guy meds, like, cool, cool, cool. And then I look at him and I was like, okay, I'm going to go put real pants on and then we'll take you to the hospital.
Yeah.
And he was like,
well, was he having a heart attack?
I don't know if he was, but he was in legit pain.
Yeah.
And I'm in sweatpants and Crocs.
Yeah.
Because he drove down the street to the firehouse because he didn't want to wake his wife up.
Oh, man.
Okay. Guys, if you think you should call an ambulance, call an ambulance.
Right.
I don't understand. The people that should call, don't.
Don't call.
And by the time they call,
it's too late.
Yeah.
It's usually too late.
Yeah. But rest assured that if you come knock on a firehouse door at 2 a.m, none of us are wearing real pants.
Right.
None of us are. I'm pretty sure I was the only person in said firehouse with pants on.
Right. Yeah.
And that's because I was sitting at the picnic table.
Yeah. I could believe that.
I was like, fuck it. I should just go in my sweatpants. Whatever.
Yeah. Fuck it.
I've gone in Crocs before and didn't realize it until I went to start the IV and I like put their hand on my leg and I looked down. I'm like, oh.
Whoops. Shit. Shit. Whoops.
Yeah.
So anyways, let's get into today.
Oh yes, this is a request.
Yes, today is a request by one of our Australian listeners.
You know, I got asked about the next episode we're doing too. I got asked if we did it yet, and I was like, oh, I have it done. But yeah, that was a total side note.
Yeah.
So
we don't know if this is going to be a two-parter yet or no.
I'm not sure.
Not sure.
I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go with yes.
Because I don't know how long I could last today. So I'm going to say it's probably going to be a two-parter.
It's longer than I anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I'm going to cut you off probably at an hour.
Okay.
So.
Well, now that I've bullshitted about my job for
20 minutes.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
But do you want to say who we're doing today?
We are doing Ivan Milat.
Ooh. So yeah, this is a request by one of our Australian listeners.
Yes.
So do you want to jump right into it?
Yes, hang on.
Uh-oh, you got a text.
Yeah, sorry.
Da-da-da.
From my partner, go figure. Okay, all right. Was Jax fucking around with this?
Yeah.
Okay, go figure. I gotta move some shit.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right, you ready?
I am ready.
Oh, I got it. Okay. All right. Ivan? I can't say Ivan and not...
Think of my partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I see him in my head. Okay. So Ivan Robert Marco Milat was born December 27th of 1944 in Guildford, New South Wales, Australia. He was
Australia, mate.
Don't do that.
I know. Please. You guys hate me already. I'm sorry.
Don't hate me. Just hate him.
I know. I'm sorry.
His parents were Steve Marco, a mine worker and a Croatian immigrant, and Margaret Elizabeth, who was an Australian national. Steve was 34 and Margaret was 16.
Ooh, heyo.
When they got married.
Heyo.
The couple had 14 children.
Close your legs.
Dude could not pull out of a motherfucking driveway.
Close your fucking legs.
Well, how do
dude.
You close your legs when he does not remove himself from you?
Right.
He's just in there. Like, you can't close your legs. You can't even put fucking pants on. The guy can't pull out of a driveway. So they had 10 boys and 4 girls. 2 of their children died, unfortunately, as was the time. That's just how it was, you know.
Yeah.
Ivan was
like Oregon Trail.
I never played that, but like it everybody died of dysentery, right?
Dude, or the fever, scarlet fever.
Are you sure it was scarlet fever?
Maybe just the regular fever.
Because scarlet fever is like a thing now. If you have strep and you don't treat it, you get scarlet fever.
Then maybe it was just the regular
dysentery
fever.
Is still a thing too, but like overseas. So Ivan was the 5th child out of 14. They were an impoverished family crammed into a shack house on a cottage farm in Bowling Park, which was a western suburb of Sydney. Can you not with the phone?
Sorry.
Jesus fuck. However, education was a big deal to them, and all the kids were sent to Catholic school. While education was important, discipline was not so much. The boys were well known to the police. This was the best line I've ever fucking written in my life because it was a quote.
Yeah.
They had a reputation for being, quote, feral heathens.
What? What the fuck is that?
The best fucking term ever.
Yeah.
Love it. They were very familiar with knives and firearms.
Oh.
And would spend afternoons shooting at targets in the yard.
Lovely.
Stephen, dad, was also a very mean drunk. And he would hit the kids and Margaret. He was seen by neighbors on occasion standing on the backs of some of the boys, hitting them with a 2x4.
Jesus
Christ. So, like,
Christ.
Standing on their back and then, like, hitting them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. His heavy drinking upset Margaret, and the explosive outburst obviously scared the kids. He really scared the shit out of the kids when he would hit Margaret in front of them.
Yeah.
Margaret would kind of egg him on, though, and I hate to say that. Like, I'm not going to victim blame, but she would nag him about his drinking and not being able to make ends meet. Hang on, I got to turn.
Flip the page.
And then Steve would nag Margaret about little things like not having dinner ready when he wanted it.
Yeah.
She would call him a drunken bastard, and he would grab her by the hair and hit her.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. He hit her on the back of the head while the kids watched. So this is just a great...
Oh, great family environment.
So apparently the children learned to be feral heathens because their parents were feral heathens.
Yeah.
Once a week, she would threaten to leave him, and he would naturally talk her out of it. Because that's what people do.
Yeah.
You know, the whole arrest him, take him to jail.
Right. I love you.
I ain't pressing charges. I love him.
I love Boo. Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, Margaret would get in on the beatings, too.
Oh.
She allegedly hit one of the boys with a knife, and on a separate occasion hit the same boy with a tomato steak so hard she broke his arm.
A tomato steak? Yeah. What the fuck is that?
I don't know.
I've never even heard of that.
I don't know, but there's no whiteout, which means I wrote it right the first time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ivan was described as a good-looking, muscular boy, fascinated with hunting and his appearance.
All right.
Because of his dad, he did not drink or do drugs, but he also said he didn't want to mess up his appearance.
Oh.
Yeah. His brother, Boris, would later say that Ivan displayed antisocial and psychopathic behavior at a young age.
Awesome.
His other siblings, though, were like, no, he was okay. He's okay. Boris was the only one who openly spoke out against Ivan.
Yeah.
The other ones probably didn't speak out against him because they were fucking in on it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, later on. We're in on it.
Exactly.
Like, even Mama Bear was in on it.
Oh. Yeah.
So, he said, quote, Ivan was pretty normal until around 12 or 14. I heard about it from his mates, you know. They'd all boast about how they'd go out at night and do things with machetes. I heard he cut a dog in half with a machete while he was growing up.
What the fuck, yeah, dude?
You know what they say? I mean, that whole, like, cutting animals, with animals, starting fires.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. He went on to say, quote, he was going to kill somebody from the age of 10. It was built into him.
Oh, Jesus.
He was on a one-way trip. It was just a matter of how long.
Yeah.
Brother George would later say that Ivan ruled the house with intimidation and violence, but didn't say a mean word about it. At age 13...
Well, isn't that saying that he's full of violence?
I mean, you're not... He didn't say he took it out. He just said he ruled with intimidation and violence. Maybe he threatened it.
Okay, yeah.
By age 13, Ivan spent time in a residential school. And by age 17, Ivan was in a juvenile detention center for theft. This is also around the time that Ivan allegedly made a confession to Boris. Ivan said he accidentally shot a driver during a robbery gone wrong. The man was paralyzed from the waist down, and an innocent man was convicted and spent 5 years in prison for it.
Whoa.
Nobody knows.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, at age 19, Ivan was involved in a shop break-in. And in 1964, was sentenced to 18 months for breaking and entering. A month after his release, Ivan was arrested for driving a stolen car and was then sentenced to 2 years of hard labor.
Hard labor. Yeah. We need that back here, dude. The States.
In 1965, Ivan's daughter, Lanice, was born. Mm. So he had a kid.
Yeah.
The mother of the child, the baby mama...
Was
Marilyn Minlott, Boris's wife.
What?
He banged quite a few of his sister-in-laws.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I guess he didn't want to, like, travel far or, like, work hard.
Yeah, I guess
they're
not.
Just there, you know.
It's easy access?
The two would end up having an 11-year-long affair.
Wow.
Yeah. Boris made the decision to raise the baby as his own. Boris, my dude. Come on.
Flip the page.
At the time, Ivan was also having an affair with his brother Wally's wife, Maureen.
Dude, what the fuck, man? Keeping it in the family.
He's like early 20s at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's not an excuse.
No. I'm just saying, like, he's already doing this, and he's like 21.
Oh, my God.
In September of 1967, 22-year-old Ivan had been arrested again for theft and was sentenced to 3 years. On April 7th of 1971, Ivan was hanging around the Liverpool train station. This is where it begins.
Oh.
Two teenage girls got off the train and walked past Ivan. He stopped them and offered them a ride. They accepted. Because that was a thing then. That was okay then.
Right.
As soon as they got in the car, Ivan pulled a knife and drove into the woods. He tied them up and said the only way he'd let them go is if one volunteered to consensually have sex with him. Otherwise, he would kill both of them.
Jesus.
So one of the girls volunteered. Mm. This is a big fucking to-do later, and it's disgusting.
Oh, God.
When he was done, the girls begged to go to a petrol station, gas station, to get drinks. When they got there, they ran inside and told the clerk what happened. And at that point, multiple angry customers ran outside to confront Ivan, which, good for you guys.
Yeah.
But he had already driven away.
Of course.
The girls immediately went to the police and gave a description of Ivan and details of the event. In August of 1971, that'll come back up. Ivan and younger brother Michael, along with two other men, robbed a bank in Canley Heights. Canley Heights, am I reading that right? Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, right? That sounds okay, right?
Sounds good.
Sorry, guys, I butcher fucking names. We all know that.
Yeah.
They used a sawed-off shotgun and a sawed-off .22 rifle. They got away with $360, which is roughly $4,500 now.
Yeah.
Michael immediately was caught. And immediately ratted everyone out.
Oh, fucking asshole.
Yeah. Ivan was arrested, but was out shortly after when Margaret, you know, his brother's wife,
right,
posted a $1,000 bond. However, he was almost immediately charged with the rape and kidnapping of the two girls from the train station.
Wow.
When Ivan found out about the charges, he fled. So, oh, no, I'm sorry. Margaret is his mother, bonded him out. So when he fled, she lost the money. And in order to avoid her losing the money, he tried to make his fleeing look like he committed suicide. He really? Went to a well-known, quote, suicide spot in Sydney called The Gap. It was like an ocean cliff.
Yeah.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
He left his shoes at the edge to make it look like he jumped.
Jumped, yeah.
Authorities believe that he fled to Queensland and Victoria before getting a fake ID and going to New Zealand, where he ended up living for 2 years.
Oh.
They suspected, though, that he returned to Australia using a fake passport to avoid detection, obviously. However, he was quickly caught upon his return in 1974 after accompanying his mother to the hospital when she was having a heart attack.
Wow.
Good son, but you're stupid.
Yeah.
Let me move these candles.
Whoa, that was loud.
Sorry, my bad. So he was officially charged with rape and kidnapping and would stand trial. Are you ready for this? This is disgusting.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. Take a puff.
At the trial, Ivan's attorney, John Marsden, who was a family attorney who would follow him, argued that the event was not kidnapping because that the girls voluntarily got into the car. He also argued that it was not rape because the girl volunteered.
Oh, dude. What a douchey
Never
fucking
mind.
Lawyer.
He was threatening their lives at the time, and they were not allowed to leave the car, which I thought that was kidnapping.
It is.
I didn't think just the act of getting them into the car was the kidnapping. It was keeping them.
Yeah, and taking them to a place.
That's what that, I thought. Yeah. Yeah. Because she verbally consented to the sex.
Yeah.
Which she did, because he said, if one of you doesn't volunteer, I will kill you both.
So who's going to say no?
Ivan was acquitted.
Get the fuck out of here.
And immediately released.
What fucking judge in their right mind? Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Here's
dude.
The sick thing. Like, I could see that being argued today, and I could see this happening today.
In Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And being acquitted in Cook County.
So in 1975, he became a truck driver for the Roads and Traffic Authority in Australia, where he remained employed on and off for approximately 20 years. In 1977, he attempted to rape and murder two more women hitchhiking from Liverpool to Canberra. He was unsuccessful but never charged. In 1984, 39-year-old Ivan married 17-year-old Karen Duck. She was pregnant with Ivan's cousin's baby at the time.
Oh.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Karen said that Ivan was, quote, gun crazy and a brutal husband. But she stayed. And
of course.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They ended up buying a home shortly after Ivan's father passed.
Yeah.
She did say, though, that Ivan was terribly abusive. She tried to leave several times, and he always convinced her to come back. He, or she, wanted a second baby. Why, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
But why? Ivan said he'd shoot her if she got pregnant.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So on February 14th, 1987, Karen took her son, Jason, and left for good. Ivan repeatedly called her mother to find her, but her mother refused to tell him. So he attempted to burn her house down.
This dude is a nut job.
In 1989, the divorce was finalized, thank God. This is also around the time that Ivan started using his brother's identity to fly under the radar to avoid paying alimony.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a dick.
And at 49 years old, Ivan moved back in with his mother.
Nice.
Yes. Okay. So now we're getting into the whole, because he was like, he was called like the hitchhiker murderer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start like when the people went missing, and then we'll go from there. Okay.
Okay.
So on December 30th of 1989, Australian nationals Deborah Everest and James Gibson, both 19, left Melbourne for Sydney. They stayed at a backpacker hostel, which I'll never stay at because of the movie Hostel.
Oh my God. Yeah. Right.
They stayed at a hostel for a bit, and they wanted to go to Confest, which was an environmental festival.
Hey.
And they planned on hitchhiking to Albury, which that was the thing, okay? Mm. And I get into it.
Yeah.
Up until the mid-1990s, hitchhiking in Australia was viewed as a completely safe, adventurous, and inexpensive means of travel.
Really?
Despite several backpackers going missing in the late 1980s, early 1990s. This was a thing, though. Like, it was in tourist guides.
Yeah.
To hitchhike.
What?
Yes, because it was a thing.
Wow.
And it's Australia. Australia's like Canada.
Yeah.
They're just better people than we are.
Oh, way better.
So so they checked out, and they were last seen headed to the fest. On December 31st, 1989, Bushwalker, Michael James, which I forgot what it was. It's not like Skinwalker. It was like a thing. He found a camera on the side of the road of Hume Highway, which is by Belanglo State Forest. Remember that.
Okay.
He took the damaged camera home. On January 15th, 1990, James Gibson's mother reported her son missing.
Mm.
On March 13th, 1990, Wendy Delsberger, I believe, found a red backpack on the side of the road in the same area as the camera.
Ooh.
She looked inside and saw a label with James Gibson's name and phone number. So she called the phone number and spoke with James's mom, who told her, like, where the fuck did you find that? Like, my kid went missing, like, forever ago. So
hello.
Wendy promptly took the backpack to the police and let them know where she found it. 2 weeks later, a newspaper ran an article about the backpack and mentioned the camera. Michael James read this article. Is he meowing?
Yeah.
What is he meowing for?
Rucker is.
What are you mad about, babies? So he saw this article and took the camera to the police.
No kidding.
He's like, so I found the camera. Like, this is the camera that I found.
Yeah.
The police searched the area but didn't find anything else.
Yeah.
On January 20th of 1991, 20-year-old German Simone Schmeidel, I believe how you say it. I'm so sorry. She left a friend's house in Sydney to hitchhike to Melbourne. Her mother was flying in from Germany to meet her for a camping holiday. They were going to go on a camping trip. Her friend Jeanette Mueller warned her against hitchhiking, but Simone shrugged it off, saying she read it in her tourist book that it was safe because, quote, Australians were warm and friendly.
Wow.
Oh, and she had a knife.
Oh, yeah. All right. All right.
So
can't forget that.
Now, the pair, her and her friend, had just spent the past several weeks hitchhiking throughout Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
So that's why Simone's like, what the fuck? Like, this is fine. And it was mostly with truck drivers.
Yeah.
So she took a bus to Hume Highway in Liverpool and planned to hitchhike from there. She had 4 days to get to Melbourne Airport to meet her mom. So that's how she was going to get there. This is where she was last seen. On January 24th, 1991, so now this is just a couple days later, Irwina Schmeidel flew to Melbourne. She went to the information desk for help when she could not find Simone. She was taken to a police station to report Simone missing. Jeanette would tell reporters that Simone was trying to get to Melbourne as quickly as possible and would not have been super careful about who she was hitchhiking with. Mm. Simone's father, Herbert, found out about this, obviously, and he filed a missing persons report in Germany. Local police told him that in Germany, people disappear and reappear all the time.
Oh.
She's not in Germany.
Right.
She's not in Germany.
But good job just to way to play it off.
Yeah. On December 26th, 1991, German backpackers Gabor Neugebauer, who was 21, and Anja Habschied was 20, flew into Darwin. They were headed to Bondi Beach, which is like a big tourist place. I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Their original plan was actually to go to Indonesia on vacation. But weather issues forced them to change their plans at the last minute. What is he doing?
Playing with a box.
What? Oh, my God. So they stayed at a backpacker's inn at King's Cross in Sydney for a few days and then left with a plan to hitchhike to Adelaide. They never made it. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't know either.
They had actually flights to Indonesia booked for January 1st of 1992, so they were still going to go to Indonesia, but they just had to put it off. And then they were due to fly back to Germany on January 24th of 1992, so they had plane tickets at this time.
Yeah.
So at this point, they did not make any of their flights, obviously. Yeah. They did not fly to Indonesia. They didn't make it back to Germany. So shortly after, Anja's father contacted Gabor's parents. And on January 30th of 1992, the parents filed missing person reports in Australia through the German embassy.
Oh, wow.
Gabor's parents then flew to Sydney to physically look for their son. Because, I mean, what else do you do?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. How fucking terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Couldn't even imagine. No. And, I mean, you're in a totally different country. It's not like you're in the next town. You're
exactly.
in a different fucking country.
Yeah.
And who the fuck can afford to fly to a different country?
Right.
You know? So, on April 18th, 1992, British citizens Joan Walters, who was 22, and Caroline Clark, who was 21, decided to hitchhike across Australia, because apparently this is a thing.
Man.
They were headed to Victoria to pick fruit.
Pick fruit.
What?
picking fruit.
That's what you go on vacation for?
Hey, picking fruit.
I mean, teaches them. They left King's Cross and made it to Bully Pass near Wollongong, which I fucking love.
Wow, yeah. Wollongong.
They were last seen asking for directions to the Hume Highway. Do you see the connections?
Yeah, okay. It's starting to connect.
On September 19th of 1992, Ken Seeley and running partner Keith Caldwell arrived at the Belanglo State Forest for a training day organized by their orienteering club. Okay, I will tell you what that is, though. The Belanglo Forest is a 40,000-acre forest.
Fuck.
That had numerous trails perfect for the sport.
Yeah.
So, orienteering. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's a competitive sport in which participants find their way to various checkpoints across rough country with the aid of a map and a compass.
Fuck
solid
that.
Nope.
Yeah. Fuck that.
It's often described as the thinking man's run or walk.
I'm going to play that and I'm going to run into fucking Michael Myers on the way.
Dude, like for fucking...
Right.
Have you seen the fucking thing on Facebook where it's like a mountain and it says, oh, if you think with your left side, you see a goat. If you think with your right side, you see a duck.
Yeah, and it's Michael Myers.
Like, this is fucking Michael Myers. This is not a goddamn motherfucking goat.
Right.
Yeah. So... So it's a combination of trail running or hiking with map reading skills, planning, and strategy. Again, no.
No. Count me out.
The participants are given a topographical map used to find control points. Can you imagine now?
Excuse me. I scared the shit out of the cats. I tried not to do it in the fucking microphone. It came too fast. Oh, my God. I'm sorry,
the cats are gone. I think they went through the fucking window.
I think so, too.
Oh, my God. That was fucking hilarious.
I'm so sorry. It came on so quick. I didn't have time to fucking cover my mouth or anything.
My God. So, I don't think this is, like, a thing now. Because, first of all, everybody has Google Maps, which I guess you could use. But
yeah.
Can you imagine telling our children to read a map or a compass?
Oh, there's no way. There's no way.
They couldn't get to Walmart with a map and a compass.
No, there's no fucking way.
What did my dad always used to say? You couldn't find your ass with two hands and a map? That would be everybody trying to do this sport.
Right.
Yeah. So by early afternoon, the men were deep in the forest and close to what was called Executioner's Drop, which was just a huge drop in the land area into a deep wooded gorge.
Great
None of
name.
That sounds fucking fantastic at all.
I'm not going there.
When approaching the next chapter, Ken smelled something bad. He dismissed it from his mind, chalking it up to a rotting animal carcass. Why is this sound like fun to you? Why are you reading a map to find dead things?
Right.
What are you doing? We're not finding Pokemon. What are we doing?
No.
Ugh.
No.
Until Keith, from the far side of a giant boulder, yelled, quote, "Can you smell that?" I wish you could see my face right now.
Oh, my God.
The men found a pile of debris that was approximately 7 feet long and 2 feet high. They first saw what appeared to be a bone and a patch of hair.
Oh, fuck.
Second PSA, it's never a mannequin.
It's never a mannequin.
It's never a mannequin.
Or a doll.
Then they saw a black T-shirt and the heel of a shoe.
Oh, man.
It was now 3:45. They marked the spot on the map. They were 800 feet southwest of Long Acre Fire Trail. Okay? So now the men had to decide to either backtrack the way that they came or finish the course, which would take them out of the forest and closer to their cars.
Yeah.
They decided finishing would be the quickest route.
Oh, of course.
Might as well. 30 minutes later, they met back up with their friends and contacted emergency services. Ken was asked by the operator if it was an emergency. He said, quote, "Not really," and was immediately hung up on.
Oh, nice. Nice.
After several phone calls.
Great 911 usage.
He was finally connected to the duty officer at the local police station in Bowral.
Hello?
Don't do that. They hate us already.
They hate us so much.
Which was a tiny town in New South Wales.
But I could just see a lone officer. Hello? The police?
You are not from Australia. What, I mean, what are you going for here?
I don't know.
It's not Australia. Have you never seen fucking Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? I have, but my Australian accent needs work. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's so more British.
Yeah. So he said, quote, "I have found a body in Belanglo Forest." He wasn't sure if they took him seriously.
A body?
Oh my God, fucking stop. It's not Australian. It's British, you fuck. Stop. So it wasn't too long before uniformed officers arrived. Nope. Just,
I know. I'm done. Cut. I'm done. They hate me already.
Local detectives, after them, requested a crime scene unit. They were then followed by regional detectives from Homicide Squad, who then called the Office of Detectives in Sydney's King's Cross and the Missing Persons Bureau. Okay? The Missing Persons Bureau was known to be actively investigating the disappearance of several backpackers.
Oh.
The following day, a second body was found. This one was partially covered by a log and was approximately 100 feet east of the first. 14 feet from one of the bodies was six cigarette butts, all the same brand. Smokers, get your fucking shit together.
Right, right.
Stop leaving cigarette butts in forests, first of all.
Yeah, right.
This is why the apocalypse is now happening in fucking LA.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, I did not know about until the other day. And yeah. I felt like a complete idiot. I was like, I should probably watch the news.
Yeah, you should watch the news. It's fucking bad.
So
our thoughts and prayers are going out to you guys in California.
Yeah.
That's fucking terrible.
Oh, my God. Total side note, too, because I'm going to have you put a GoFundMe on our thing. So, a lot of these people, like the Palisades, that's all the rich people. So, the not rich people, they're fucked. Because in that area, you have to have homeowners insurance, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have separate fire insurance.
Oh.
But the problem is that these people, like these insurance companies, are bumping the fire insurance to the point that these families cannot afford fire insurance.
God.
And because the homeowner's insurance basically is like, well, prove that it was an act of God, which you can't.
Right.
Fuck you. We're not covering anything. File it with your fire insurance. And they don't have fire insurance.
Oh, my God.
There are families literally losing everything.
It's heartbreaking.
Everything. Because they can't afford the fire insurance.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So, so not far from them was a fired .22 caliber cartridge case and a piece of green plastic like the size of a coin. After using a metal detector, nine more casings were found 12 feet from the first body, and three more were recovered from directly below the head of the first body. 120 feet from the scene, police found a fireplace built from house bricks.
Oh.
Like some Blair Witch Project shit.
Oh, fuck that.
Like how that was it fireplaces that were built? I know shit was hung from the trees and stuff.
No, like, it was like wooden fucking
something was
decorative
built. Yeah.
Stuff.
Okay, so fireplaces were built. September 20th of 1992, late in the afternoon, police confirmed that the remains found were those of Caroline Clark and Joanne Walters.
Oh, man.
This is a little brutal, but...
Trigger warning?
No, I mean, you guys know what you're here for. Joanne had small dark hairs on her shirt and hand. There was a cloth used as a gag in her mouth and some pieces of cloth around her neck. There were no clear signs of rape, but a rape kit was done anyways. There were 14
usually
stab wounds.
Always is done.
Yeah, five to the spine. There was also no defensive wounds, which led police to believe that she had been restrained. She still had jewelry on both hands, so it wasn't a robbery. And she was wearing blue jeans and black shoes. Caroline was found with her arms stretched above her head. She had a red cloth wrapped around her head. She had 10 gunshot wounds to the head.
Oh, my God, dude.
She had one stab to the back, severing the spine, which becomes a calling card, almost, the severing of the spine.
Mm.
No personal items or any of their camping gear was found. And forensic pathologist Professor John Hilton released detailed findings to a large group of reporters, which he probably shouldn't have. He was a very experienced pathologist, but not used to speaking to the media, and he was deeply disturbed by the brutality of the crimes.
Yeah.
I need a sip.
Take a sip.
Over the next 5 days, 40 police officers searched a perimeter that was 500 feet wide and 1.5 miles long. Following this, police told the media they had virtually ruled out the possibility of finding more bodies.
Hmm.
How did your fucking shoe taste when you shoved your fucking foot in your mouth?
Yeah.
Just wondering.
Uh-oh.
There's several backpackers missing. You found two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Within weeks of finding the bodies, detectives had an array of physical evidence, but had no real clues regarding the identity of the killer. There were several alleged sightings, but the trail was already cold before police got involved. As alleged sightings of what? I don't know.
Yeah.
Police reached out to Dr. Rod Milton. He was an experienced forensic psychiatrist who had previously helped with the capture of a serial killer in 1989. He requested to be taken to the crime scene. His first thought was that the killer was familiar with the area, and this was not a crime of opportunity, but more of a planned murder.
Yeah.
He also did not feel the killings were sexually motivated, but were more for execution. Mm. The single stab to Caroline showed control or a second person.
Yeah,
and
true.
Joanne's frenzied and more likely to be a sexual attack.
Right.
I thought you just said it wasn't sexually motivated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the psychiatrists...
Foot and mouth.
The psychiatrists kind of like contradict themselves.
Yeah.
In the same sentence. Yeah.
And they make fucking millions.
Yeah. When asked by police what he thought the motive was, Dr. Milton stated, quote, pleasure. He believed that if there were two killers, one would be older and dominant, and the other would be equally sadistic, but more submissive to the first. He suggested that they could be brothers with common interest in guns and hunting. They had probably been involved in other sexually related crimes, either together or separately. Later, Dr. Milton recorded a profile in point form. These were his points. He believed that they lived on the outskirts of the city in a semi-rural area. They were employed in semi-skilled jobs, probably outdoors, involved in unstable or unsatisfactory relationships, have a history of homosexuality or bisexuality, because in the 70s, you were fucking evil if you were gay.
Yeah, of course.
Had a history of aggression against authority, would most likely be aged in their mid-30s.
Mm.
Now, the doctor never gave any indication that he felt this was the work of a serial killer.
Yeah.
On October 5th of 1993, Bruce Pryor was in Belanglo Forest looking for firewood. This was normal for him to do, but since the discovery of the bodies, he found himself searching areas he'd never been to, because now he's looking.
Of course he is.
Today was no different. Fire trail. He saw a small fireplace built from bush rocks.
Oh.
He wandered to a clearing approximately 150 feet from his parked truck, where he found a large bone.
Oh.
That he immediately picked up and compared to his own femur.
Oh, my God.
Which I'm not making fun of him, because realistically...
I would probably do the same thing.
We all would be like, is that human?
Yeah.
Do you think it's human? Dude, pick it up.
Yeah.
Put it against your leg. Who's taller?
Exactly.
Put it against their leg. What about this? We all would fucking do that.
Yeah.
And then we would probably hit each other with it and...
Right.
I mean, let's just call a spade here. That's what would fucking happen.
Right.
So further up, he found a skull. Mm. Now, afraid that no one would believe him, he wrapped the skull in a cloth and took it with him.
At least he was smart about that.
And put it in a cloth instead of just, like, seatbelted it next
right,
to him.
Yeah. Right.
So a half an hour after that, he contacted the police and two officers arrived who were surprised by the find. They then found another body approximately 120 feet away. Both bodies had incomplete skeletons, and police brought forensic odontologist Dr. Chris Griffith to the
scene. What's an odontologist?
Teeth.
Oh.
So it used to be like a big thing, odontology. It became very popular in like late 70s, mm-hmm. and it's how Ted Bundy was convicted.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right. not a thing very much anymore.
No, it's
Neither
not.
Neither is hair. Hair is not a super big thing anymore.
It's not.
So by the first skeleton, they found a silver fob chain, a bracelet, and a silver crucifix. For the second skeleton, there was white sneakers on the feet with a zipper, like a jean zipper. Compared to the dental records, it became known, or the odontologist said it was a positive match to James Gibson, which then made them assume that the first skeleton was Deborah Everest, who he was with. They were confused as to how Gibson's property got to the other side of Sydney, though. because it was on the complete other side.
Right.
The property found was leaning up against a guardrail in plain sight, which led police to now think that this was an attempt to divert attention from Belango Forest.
Oh, okay.
I'll go through their wounds and then we'll do a part two because there's no way. So James had a stab wound to the mid-thoracic spine, which is like middle of the back, which paralyzed him. Two stab wounds to the chest and two to the upper back. The breastbone wounds were similar in size to that of Walters and Clark, which made him think, okay, now it's maybe the same one. Deborah had several skull fractures at the back of her head. She had four slash marks to the forehead and one stab wound to the lower back. 30 feet from Deborah was a black bra with a stab through it and gray tights that were tied, and they believe that those were possibly a restraint then.
Oh.
Superintendent of the police department, Clive Small, deputized by the commissioner of police, by the commissioner of the police to take control of the investigation. His first task was to combine the small groups of detectives into one cohesive group.
Yeah, that's smart.
They officially titled this Task Force AIR. They spelled it A-I-R. Now, it was supposed to be E-Y-R-E, AIR.
Yeah.
After a small lake, because they had a tradition to name their task force after geographical locations, but the media misspelled it.
Oh, good job.
It's funny. That's how my name got to be spelled the way that it is.
Now it's said funny.
So
AIR.
Yeah. They set up a public hotline. They felt that this was going to be the most valuable resource of, quote, real evidence versus circumstantial evidence that they had already collected.
Hmm.
So, this becomes a big fucking to-do.
Yeah.
There's still more bodies to be found. But this guy, like, is kind of, like, getting their shit together at this point.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
Yeah. So, this is, like, I mean, now they have egg on their face because they literally said...
They searched.
There's virtually the impossibility of any bodies ever being found again.
Right.
You guys have like 92 fucking backpackers missing. Why would you say that?
Right.
It's a forest. You know how many bodies are found in forests?
Right.
So what you should have said was, okay, so we all walked 500 feet to the left. There's no bodies there.
None.
And
50 feet to the right.
Right. 75 feet to the right. Not sure. Could be something. Not sure. But
right.
500 feet to the left, nothing.
Right.
Virtually no bodies. None whatsoever. We have no idea what's in front of us. We have no idea what's behind us.
Right.
But there's none 500 feet to the right.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, guys?
Oh, man.
So this is where we're going to wrap it up, because now he gets into, like, this whole big grid search of the forest.
And okay.
This becomes a fuck.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is getting juicy. Now, this is a good case.
It is a good case. It's a really good case. And how he gets caught is... insane.
Bonkers.
Yeah, because like, I should say the amount of time it takes him to get caught from how he gets caught is even 10 times fucking worse.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with like computer systems and like shit like that. It's just...
But you gotta think, Australia, like I'm not putting them down, but they don't have many cases.
Oh, like no. I'm not saying it's any fault of the police.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, so they have this... Hang on, my contact fell out. You know, they have this system that they're using to try and cross-reference a bunch of shit. And it works until they get too many leads.
Oh.
Or too many, like, tips.
Okay.
So then they're trying to implement a new one so it would cross-reference more things.
Yeah.
But they have to hand-put in everything.
Oh, Jesus.
In the meantime, while they're still, like... manually entering everything, there's still tips coming in. So, like, these guys are trying to keep up really as much as they fucking can.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you've seen me try and write shit down.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus fuck.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're giving it all they got, really. It's just, it's bonkers how it happens. So,
man. Yeah. Well, this is getting good.
Yeah,
so,
it gets really good. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for this request.
This is a good one.
This is a good case.
Yep.
So, I hope you guys enjoyed episode one or part one.
What's today? Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Okay, so I should be off Friday, so we should be able to record.
Yeah, because you got a 48 coming up. Yeah, so
we should be able to do it Friday.
So Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, we'll do part two.
You're cute, because I'm off Friday, and then I have another 48 Saturday, Sunday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, all right then.
Yeah.
So then we'll have to do it Friday.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, by the way, what do you call a sleeping bull?
God, I thought we would got all the way through it.
Nope. What do you call a sleeping bull?
I don't know. Your butthole?
A bulldozer.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Oh, thank you. I'll be here all week. All right, guys, thank you. I hope you enjoyed this. We will be out with part two shortly. Thank you. Tell your friends, tell your family. Like, subscribe, follow us, do the whole nitty gritty. If you want to become a Patreon, www.patreon.com/deathdouspart, the number one. And we will be talking to you guys soon. Bye.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.